52. The ornate hands on the gilt clock above the fireplace read 7:20. With the heavy emerald curtains pulled, Katie could no longer have told you whether that was morning or evening. The last 24 hours felt like some terrible, surreal dream. She sat in the living room while Gabe poured drinks in the kitchen. She hugged herself to contain a shiver. The room was beautiful, but cold, and she wasn't sure that had anything to do with its size or the heating. The whole house lacked warmth. But that wasn't all. There was something else. Something just slightly off about this place. Like a sealed exhibit. A place not even blessed with ghosts, because it had never been full of life. Despite the elegance of this room, there were incongruous touches. The flat-screen television on the wall beside the fireplace, two large tan leather recliners, and a gas fire glowing in the hearth, where she presumed there had once been a real fire, although tonight she was grateful for convenience over aesthetics. Gabe had mentioned that Miriam, the head nurse, lived here. She supposed she had to make it more livable in, but still, it seemed that the house was crying out for someone to love it properly, to appreciate it, to reanimate it. And then she thought about the girl lying in the south wing. This house wasn't really a home. It was a living mausoleum, and Gabe was its keeper. She wondered why he didn't just sell it, but then perhaps he couldn't. Perhaps he felt duty-bound to look after the girl he had almost killed. Rereading the news stories online had refreshed her memory. The night his wife and daughter were murdered, Gabe had been visiting the girl he had put into a coma years ago in a car accident. The very thing that had given him an alibi, proven him innocent of their murders, had been the thing the papers had used to crucify him with. Nail after rusty nail. A hit and run, they called it. Except Gabe had not run. He had stayed with the girl, handed himself into the police, and visited her ever since. But that part was missed out. He was already as good as a killer. He was a drunk driver. He had left a girl brain dead. The none too subtle implication was that somehow he had brought all of this on himself. It was justice. Karma. She remembered feeling sorry for him at the time. A mistake from his youth dredged up and used against him. And then she thought about her dad. About the young man who had killed him. About how it had destroyed her family. An eye for an eye. Brandy? Gabe walked back into the room holding two large glasses of amber liquid. Hefty measures. She never drank brandy, but she had heard it was good for numbing shock. She took a gulp. Jesus Christ. Talk about numbing. She felt like it had seared the nerve endings from her throat. From the way Gabe gagged when he sipped his, it seemed like he wasn't much of a drinker either. But then he took a second larger gulp, and she guessed that, like her, he needed it. He sat down on the opposite sofa and they perched awkwardly, clutching their glasses, a large oak coffee table between them, unsure if they were allies or opponents. And then he said, "Thank you." It wasn't what she was expecting. "However this happened, you brought my daughter back to me. There were times when even I doubted she was still alive, when I thought that maybe everyone was right and I had lost my mind. It's impossible to tell you how much this day means to me." He paused, took another swig of drink. "But if you had anything to do with what happened to Izzy, I will hand you over to the police without a second thought," she said steadily. "I didn't. The first I knew about any of this was last night. I didn't even know for sure that Izzy was your daughter. She was calling herself Alice." "Alice?" His face darkened. "I suppose that was the name this woman, Fran, gave her." She looked down into her glass. "I want you to keep in mind that whatever you think about the woman who took Izzy, she has looked after her and kept her safe all this time." He barked out a hard laugh. "She kidnapped my daughter. She made me believe she was dead. Why the hell are you defending her?" She took another sip of brandy and grimaced. "She's my sister. Your sister? Something changed in his face. Of course. He shook his head. I'm such a fucking idiot. Look, I hadn't seen or heard from Fran in over 9 years. Then yesterday afternoon, I got a phone call from a girl I believed was Fran's daughter asking for my help. Completely out of the blue. Yes. And you just believed her? Whatever was going on, she was a child, scared and alone. I fetched her and brought her home.
What did she tell you?
Not much at first. She said her name was Alice and that Fran had told her to call my number if she was ever in trouble. She swallowed. But from the start, there were things that didn't feel right. She forgot to call Fran Mum, and I noticed that her hair had been dyed. I wasn't sure why you would dye an 8-year-old's hair.
7, Gabe said.
Sorry? Her birthday isn't until April, 2 months away. She's 7.
Katie felt her cheeks flush.
I'm sorry.
Go on, he said tersely. She took another gulp of brandy. She was getting more used to the burning sensation now.
Later that night, she admitted that Fran wasn't her real mum. She said her real mum was dead. Fran had saved her and kept her safe, but now she's disappeared.
Why didn't you call the police?
I was going to this morning.
And?
This happened. She pointed at her face. A man came to the house. He was after Izzy. I think he would have killed me, but Izzy knocked him out with her bag of pebbles. She saved my life. The smallest of smiles tilted the corners of his lips. That's my girl.
She felt a momentary loosening of the tension, the mistrust between them. Then he frowned. Why didn't you call the police then?
Because the man who attacked me was a police officer.
She saw his eyes widen. Realization dawning.
The man who stabbed me was dressed in a police uniform. Young, stocky, shaven head.
He nodded, and she felt a chill. All this time, Steve had been using her sister, just not in the way she thought.
That sounds like him.
Why would a police officer be involved in this?
She shrugged. Everyone has a price.
She thought about the look in Steve's eyes. The enjoyment.
Some are just cheaper than others.
It seemed as if he were about to say something to this. Then he shook his head. That's why you ran.
And then I called you.
He nodded, considering.
I still don't understand, though.
How did you realize that Alice was Izzy? How did you even get my number?
Katie reached into her pocket and pulled out the crumpled flyer. She held it out to him. I kept hold of it. And you recognize Izzy from this picture?
Isn't that a bit of a leap?
She hesitated.
How much to say? How much to admit? She placed the brandy glass carefully on the large coffee table.
My sister is not a bad person. I really believe that what she did for Izzy to protect her. How do you know?
You haven't seen her in 9 years, or is that a lie?
No.
I mean, when you think about it, it's all a bit convenient. You just happen to work at the service station where I stop for coffee, and your sister turns out to be the person who kidnapped my daughter. What are the odds?
She glared at him. You think I'd waste my life working for years in a shitty cafe just on the off chance that you might call in once a week and ignore me? Yeah, great plan. In the last 24 hours, I've been attacked in my own home, forced to take my children and run. I don't know if we'll ever feel safe going back. I have no idea if my sister is alive or dead. How do you think that makes me feel? I never asked for any of this.
She felt tears burning and tried furiously to blink them back. She would not cry in front of him.
Keep it together,
like you always do. He stared at her, a strange look in his eyes. Then he sighed and sagged back onto the sofa. The anger subsiding.
If your sister isn't a bad person, why was she in my house that night? Why did she take Izzy and run? Why did she abandon her own daughter's body? What sort of mother does that? I don't know. I can only think she was terrified. She must have seen the killer. Maybe she abandoned her daughter
to save yours.
Why didn't she just call the police?
Maybe she couldn't. Maybe she had got herself involved in something she couldn't get out of.
What? What could she have been involved in that could lead to this?
Katie wavered. Now or never.
She took out her purse.
Her hand shook. She slipped out the dog-eared business card and laid it on the coffee table. The other people.
Gabe stared at the card and then looked up at her. What do you know about the other people? What do you know? Vigilante justice.
Quid pro quo. An eye for an eye.
Requests and favours.
She finished bitterly.
My sister owed the other people a favour.
What for? What did she ask them to do?
Kill the person who murdered our dad?